Okay, so the Gemara has over here the story of Hordas. If you ever wondered about Hordas' backstory, it all appears here in Baba Basra, Gimel and Beis, going over to Daan Amaral. So look about 15 lines up from the bottom of Gimel and Beis. The Gemara begins the story. Hordas, after the Beis Chashmonoi Hava, he was a servant in the house of the Chashmonoi. Nosav Eina Bais at Tinoikis. He had an infatuation with a certain young lady. Yumachad, Shama Hahu Gavra, Baskala, he heard a Basko. The Amakal Avda Demorid Hashta Mislach. Whoever rebels and escapes now will be successful. Kamkat Lunu Kuhu Marvosa. So he killed his entire leadership structure there in the house. You know, those the aristocrats who he served. Vishari Lahu Yanukta. But he left alive this little girl who he had an infatuation with because he intended to marry her. Kichaza Hahu Yanukta, the Kabbalah Mintzava, when this young lady saw that she was intended, or that Hordas had intentions to marry her. So, the Igra Varamakala, she went up to the roof, raised her voice, Amrakol man da osi va'amri beis chashmanoi kasina, whoever says I'm coming from the house of chashmanoim, avdahu, is an avid because she's the last left over from the chashmanoim. We could discuss another time why is it that the chashmanoim were all killed by Hordas. Right, Hordas here killed all the chashmanoim. That was who he served. He was an avid of the beis chashmanoim. What did the chashmanoim do wrong that they deserve to be killed? It's an important discussion. Not really relevant here to the Gemara Baba Basra, more Hanukkah discussion. Did the Chashmonaim were the great heroes of Hanukkah, but did they do something wrong? Maybe they violated the pasuk of Kilo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda, that the scepter of leadership is supposed to be with Yehuda, as opposed to the base Chashmonaim. That was a temporary thing, but yet they attempted to establish a dynasty, the Ramban writes on Chumash. And for that reason, they violated the Seser. Maybe that's why the house of Chashmonaim met its demise and its end. But either way, whoever says I'm from the house of Chashmonaim is an Eved, because the only one who's left over, so the only person that was left over is me, right, this young lady. She's talking about herself in the third person, and this young lady fell from the roof to the ground, and she jumped. Hordas, who was infatuated with this young lady, preserved her in Dvash, in honey. Igadami Bolel, he satisfied himself. Igadami Lo Bolel, Dami those who held that he preserved, that he was Bala, that he had relations with her, then that's exactly why he preserved her. Those who say they did not have relations with her, the name of Basmel Nasid. So people should be able to say that he married the daughter of a king. Which implies, I don't know, that he somehow left her in the living room, you know, in the kind of a wax museum type idea, and showed her off to everyone who came. A new meaning to the word trophy wife. I don't know. It's a whole complicated situation over here. A lot to unpack. But he said, who said that because, you know, I'm prevented from being a Jewish ruler? Because Chazal darsh from the pasuk mikarev achicha tos melecha melech. That you have to be Mikarev Achecha. You cannot be a king unless you are from the Jewish people, meaning unless you were born a Jew. If a person was not born a Jew, even if he converted, he cannot be appointed as the king. In Klal Yisrael, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, we've discussed another time, I don't remember how recently, but that in order to be appointed to a position of leadership, and we learned Chulin, in order to be appointed to a position of leadership in the community, you have to be born a Jew, not only to be a king, but to be any position of authority within the community. So, you know, perhaps rabbinic leadership positions, or perhaps, you know, other leadership positions in the community are a dayan. All these kinds of things might be restricted to a ger, might be restricted to a woman too, because the piska rabasi darshins sam to simulach melech melech v'loy malka. So there's two restrictions on who can be a king. A woman cannot be a king, and also a person has to be born a Jew, because the pasuk says, "Mikher v'checha tosim alecha melech." Amongst your brethren, a person who's born your brother, if he's converted later, he cannot be a king, cannot be a position of leadership. We have it, but we have had people who were gerim in the smicha program, even though they're studying to be rabbis. Maybe a rabbi, so maybe you argue a rabbi is not a position of leadership. It's an avdus, it's a servitude. There are those that felt that way. That's what the Rav used to say, that it's not a position of leadership. Maybe it's not as it once was, but in the smicha program we allow it officially. But there are those who don't feel that because we provide a lot of different things. We provide chaplains, we provide educators, we provide Rosh Yeshiva, we provide shul rabbi. Shul rabbi might be a position of authority. educator is not a position of authority. So, whatever, we service a lot of different aspects of the rabbinate, but you know, generally speaking, it's restricted to a person who's born a Jew. Certainly an Eved, therefore, would be excluded. So, Maman Dorish Mikar V'Chech, Tizim Tosim Alech HaMelech Rabbonon, the rabbis! Come, Katlinu L'Kuhu Rabbonon. Let's go kill all the rabbis. Shav Kile Ben Buta. He left alive Ben Buta. The Mishko Eitz Minei. I'm not sure what Bamez Zocha Ben Buta. Why did he leave alive specifically Ben Buta? But, and he went to seek an Eitz from Ben Buta. Hada Le Khalil Diyale Nikrinu Le'enes. He made him wear this kind of torturous crown that poked out his eyes. Yumachad Asav Yosef Kamei. So once he was sitting next to Ben Buta, who was blind. Omar Chazi Mar, Hai Abdabisha, see this Eved, who's, you know, making himself into a king, referring to himself without disclosing his identity to Ben Buta. Maika of it said, Ben Buta, what do you want me to do? What can I do about this Hurdus? Amale, my Avale. Maika of it, what should we do? Amale, my Avale. Well, you know, what, I don't know, what can I do to him? Amale, Nilat Yamar. Curse him. You never curse the king, Pasuk in Koheles, even in your mind, don't curse the king, because it'll get back and harm you. He's not a king, he's an imposter. Even if he's just a rich man, don't curse the Osh, because you need him. Don't burn a bridge. Let him be a Nasi. Even if it's just a Nasi, don't curse the Nasi. That's only if they're doing the proper Torah and Mitzvahs. He's not doing Torah and the Mitzvahs. I said, I'm scared of him. But no one's going to tell him what you said. Say it. Curse him. Who's going to tell him what you said? It's only me and you. And he didn't tell me. He was heard this himself. The birds, as they say, the walls have ears. Some say like that. I know people who don't do business on the phone because they always believe their phones are being tapped. So sometimes the phones do have ears, right? But the walls have, interesting people. But the walls have ears. You never know what things get back. So therefore, he didn't want to say anything, you know, against Hurdus. Hurdus was very impressed by this, and therefore we'll see what Hurdus does. But I think you see, Bamir, a really important lesson, by the way. And that is, and it's not only discussing Rishayim or people in positions of power and leadership, it's always important, never burn a bridge. Never burn a bridge. It's never worth it. Never go to scorched earth. You see, like this, and never talk badly about people behind their back, because it always has a way of getting back to them. But this is a practical advice. But I think you see from here something even deeper. And that is, even though Hurdus was a bad guy, Ben Buta didn't think negative thoughts about him. Meaning, because I think there's a practical side to it. You know, that if you think it, at some point you're going to say it. But, you know, I think he viewed the situation positively. He didn't let himself get down about the situation. I'm not trying to, you know, speak like I said, psychologically here. But I think that the fact that he couldn't bring himself to curse him because, you know, came up with all these excuses is not just because he was aware that rumors have a tendency to get around. I think it's because he judged him in his mind, or he judged his situation in his mind positively, and therefore refused to let himself be put in that situation of viewing it negatively. Which I think is such an important idea, is that even if the person is in a negative situation, you see that he refused to allow himself to be in that mindset. I think that's what you see. And there is a practical side to it too, is that never even think negative thoughts about other people, particularly if you might need them someday. And every dog has his day. You never know who you might need at some point. I don't like to be, you know, manipulative, but you never pays to speak negatively about people, fundamentally and practically, either. And that was the practice of Ben Buta. So I'm like, Anna, who this revealed himself? Haha, it was me. I havoya dana de zahari rabbanon kuli haif. I know you were so careful about my COVID. Lo havi katilna lohu. I never would have killed them. Hashda maita kante. So Hurdus over here is doing tshuva. What should I do for killing all these rabbis? My takanta the hugaver is talking about himself in the third person. What's the takanta for this guy? Amalei kava oirei shel olam. You extinguish the light of the world. Kiner mitzvah v'teira or mitzvah provides a little bit of light. Torah provides even more light. And there is like a candle. Torah provides a tremendous amount of illumination. Because this world is compared to darkness. And the way that you find your way in this world is kiner mitzvah v'teira or is by doing mitzvahs and by learning Torah. So a mitzvah provides a little bit of light, a little bit of R. Torah provides even more light. So he said, you extinguish the light of the world by killing these Talmid Chachamim, Yerech V'yasek Baruch Shalom. Go and restore the light of the world, Dechsev and Aharu Eilav, Ko HaGoyim, that the Beis HaMikdash is a light for all of the Goyim. Meaning it shines the way in this world as to what reminds us, what's important, what's not important, you know, clears up any kind of misconceptions about what direction a person should be headed in life. So just like Torah is the awe of the world, so to the Beis HaMikdash, go and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Ikadami Hachi Amalei. You blinded the world, because the Talmid Chachamim are the eyes of the generation. They help us figure out which direction to go in, right? The GPS. Go and rebuild the eye of the world, which is the Beis HaMikdash. It's coming. Amalei, he said to him, Mistafinim Achusa, he said, I'm afraid of the government, the Roman government is not going to let me do this. Amalei, Shadar Shlicha Velezel Shasa, Velayakov Shasa. He told him the best Eitzah, this is why I use Eitzah. Don't ask permission. Send a messenger in an email somewhere, or in snail mail. Make sure it takes a year. Then by the time it gets back, it's another year. Adahachi Vahachi, Sasusle, Ubanisle. Adahachi Vahachi, well, this is all taking place. He's going, he's coming. You're going to destroy the whole thing. You rebuild the whole thing before they, you know, before they are ever the wiser. Avid Hachi, Shokule, and Losa Tarta, Altista, he sent the message, they said back, if you didn't destroy it, don't destroy it. If you destroyed it, don't build it, don't rebuild it. And if you destroyed it and rebuild it, you're an Abdabisha, you're a bad guy. Why? Because, Bosa da Abdin Mismalchin. After you do, you ask permission. That's why you slogan, we should get a t-shirt. Bosa da Abdin Mismalchin. Always the best Eitzah. Never to ask permission. Always easier to ask forgiveness than to ask permission. Im Zayin Kala Sifrucha. Where are we? Yeah. It's from different pasuk. Okay. Asha, the Gemara continues. Amri, they said, Hordas rebuilt the base. I mean, there's beautiful. Mishal Ara Binyan Hordas Lara Binyan Noah Miyamav. Anybody who never saw the Binyan of Hordas never saw a beautiful building in his days. My banya, Amaraba ba'avne shisha umarma. What is that? What's avne shisha umarma? Rashi says green stones. Ikadami ba'avne kuchala shisha. There are those that say it was blue stones. Ba'avne kuchala shisha umarma. Apik safa bi'ayal safa. So one second. And what's mirma? White. So it's green, blue, white. Beautiful. Green, blue, and white. And one stone coming in and one stone going out. Apik safa v'ayal safo. Meaning it was a tiered kind of bricklaying. Ki hecha denakbo sida. So it should accept the sid, the plaster. Sava l'mishaya b'dahava. He thought to dress it in gold. Make it gold plated. Wow, beautiful. Amalei rabbanan shavki. Leave it alone. Dehaki shapir tvei. This looks prettier. Demaxi ke idvasa demaya. The Yama. It looks like the waves of the sea. Interesting. He was going to coat it in gold. They said, don't do that. It looks more beautiful as it is now, as a sea. And whoever never saw the Binyan of Hordas never saw a Binyan Yafa Miyamav. So Rav Huttner has two ha'aras here. The Pachad Yitzchak. One on Hanukkah and one on Purim. We're not going to delve into Hanukkah and Purim now, but why he mentions it there. But one is in his commentary on Hanukkah, one is in his commentary on Purim, Pachad Yitzchak. The first is, you see the Chazal care how big, beautiful the building is. They're praising how beautiful it is. He wanted to coat it in gold. They said, no, it's more beautiful the way it is now. Since when do we care about beauty? But it's not the first time, of course. The question really, you know, could be asked already in these coming, you know, the parashiyos that are down the pike a little bit. Right, that Sarah is described, or last week, right? Sarah is described as a beautiful woman. Rivka is described as, you know, Yifas Toyar. Rachel is described as Yifas Toyar. Since when do we care about this? What happened to Sheker Achein, Behevel HaYoyfi? At the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah. Sarah was as beautiful as at 100, as she was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 5. Stamakasha, we typically don't describe a 5-year-old as beautiful. The 20-year-old might be more beautiful. There might be a Tel Sofer in Rashi. Right, Chazal say when she was 20, she was as beautiful, right? What is it? Well, she was, Sarah was 120 and 5 years old. So Rashi says, why does it say years, 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 3 times? Mea shana v'esim shana v'sheva shanim, right? No, am I saying it over wrong? Shivim shana v'sheva, what was it supposed to be? What is Rashi saying? The post says Shanim three times, years three times. So Rashi says, why? To teach us when she was 100, she was free from sin like she was 20. When she was 20, she was as beautiful as she was when she was 5. We would have said, free from innocent, you know, as 5. When she was 20, she was free from sin like 5-year-old. When she was 100, she was as beautiful, whatever. We probably would have switched it. In fact, there's another Girsa in Rashi that the beauty is attributed to the 20-year-old, not to the 5-year-old. Maybe there's a beauty of innocence that the 5-year-old has, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, who knows? But it's strange, Rashi. But clearly, you see, beauty matters, right, to the Torah. Rachel is described as beautiful. Maybe it means their inner side was beautiful. That's not what the Pashup Shah and the Pasuk is. Pashup Shah and the Pasuk is that they're, you know, that they were handsome or pretty people. Why do we care about that? What happened to Sheker Achein Behevwa Yoifi? So Vilna Gaon has a fantastic shot in that pasuk in Sefer in Ish Chayil from Shir HaShirim. No, Ish Chayil is in Mishlei. So Vilna Gaon has a comment on that pasuk in. That when a woman has Yiras Hashem, then even the chen and the yoifi should be praised. So Sheker Achen Behevwa Yoifi is if it's by itself. Ish Yiras Hashem, when she has Yiras Hashem, not only is the Yiras Hashem praiseworthy, but the chen and the yoifi is praiseworthy as well. Meaning, we do value these things in context. Not independently, but when it comes in the context of something in, you know, that's intrinsically holy, it does enhance it. So when a woman has Yiras Hashem, the fact that she has Chayin and Yofi, that is important to Chazal. That is important to the Torah. But only in that context. And that fits here too. When we're talking about a Beis HaMikdash, yeah, it's great. It's great if you have a beautiful Esrog box. It's not a waste of time, or a waste of money even. We do care about Hidur Mitzvah. And Hidur Mitzvah means it should look beautiful. To me, it means more than that, right? It means to fulfill a mitzvah to the best possible way. And we could discuss whether an Esrog box is even Hidur Mitzvah in the first place, because that's not the mitzvah at all. But, you know, to a certain degree, these things are important. It's nice. It enhances the mitzvah, if it's for a mitzvah. If it's not in context, then that's, you know, that's Sheker Achein Behevel Ayofi. That's a waste of time, at best, right? More vanity. Perhaps even worse. But when it's in context, you see that it does indeed have value. In fact, when Paro tells his dreams to Yosef, so Paro says he saw 7 fat cows that were healthy too, and handsome cows. So he tells him that the cows were Yifas Mare Ubriyos Basar. That's what he saw in the dream, that they were Yifas Mare Ubriyos Basar. But when Paro relates the dream to Yosef, he switches the order. There it's Briyos Basar Yifas Mare. They're healthy and beautiful. So when he saw it in his dream, the Torah says they were beautiful and healthy. When he related the dream to Yosef, he switched the order. Now they were healthy and then beautiful. Why though switch? So the Ragged Shavar has comments on Chumash called Tzafnas Paneach. That's what a Sefer is called in the Rambam too. So the Ragged Shavar in Parshas Miketz, where the dreams appear. So the Rav Shavar explains that what's going on over here is a debate between essence, right, and you know, substance, and form and beauty. So there's always a tug of war between the two. Do we want to go for what looks good or for what, you know, for what tastes good? And sometimes they come together and sometimes they don't, right? Sometimes what is substantial is also, you know, beautiful. Sometimes external beauty, you know, is all that there's there and it's surface deep and there's nothing beyond that. So sometimes they come together, sometimes not. But you know, what's the proper order is critical. Because Paro saw it, Paro cared about external. So Paro saw it, it was Yifas Mayar. Oh, and then there was substance too, Briyos Basar, they happened to be healthy. But he didn't really care about the healthy side of it. He really cared first about the Yifas Toya, that they were, Yifas Mara, that they were pretty or beautiful cows. Yosef, just the opposite. Yosef cared whether they were beautiful, but only after he knew that they were substantial, that they were healthy, that they were B'yoyz Basar. So it is important to Yosef, but of secondary importance, not of primary importance. And that's critical. The order, the perspective that we have on these things, you know, is all the difference. It's Yafi Fusa Sho Yefes, right? The Pasuk says, Yafta V'kim Yefes, V'yishkom V'hol Eshem. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave beauty to Yefes. One of the sons of Yefes was Yavan, was the Greeks. That's what it appears in the Pachad Yitzchak on Chanukah. So external beauty is fine, but Yafta Lakim Yefes Vishkan Bahale Shem, but it has to be in the temples, you know, in the Beis HaMikdash of Shem. So that makes, you know, that's exactly all the difference. So I think over here too, that's where Futner claims, as you see from this Gemara, is that beauty is important. Chazal cared about it. In fact, they commented on the interior decorating, or exterior decorating, of the Beis HaMikdash, not to overlay the stones that were so beautiful with gold, because they cared about the beauty of it. And I think that's a little bit lost in our times. I think to a certain degree, we've gone to the opposite extreme, or we have both extremes. We either think that in our secular lives, or perhaps in the non life of the Beis HaMedrash, everyone's a little bit too focused on the externals. But sometimes we think that the world of the Beis HaMedrash doesn't care about those things at all, and you know it's to a certain extent that's been lost in the world of the Beis HaMedrash. But the truth of the matter is, it has nothing to do with Torah Mad or anything like that. The truth of the matter is that they're really related. It's important in context. And it's easy to go to one extreme or the other, but the truth of the matter is that the external beauty has what to offer. They cared. They cared about what the building looked like. The Rabbanim cared, and therefore they advised Hordas about how to do it. Well, what's interesting, though, is, and this is Futner's other point, is that they wanted it to look like the sea, like the sea. They wanted the blue, the green, and the white, because it looked, idvasa de yama, it looked like the ocean, like the waves. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Idvasa the yama, gale ayam, the wave. Shehim noim v'nodim va'ayin misasheshes b'riyoson." People like looking at it. It's beautiful. They cared about that, but they wanted it to be waves. Why dafka the waves? Why they care so much about the waves? So Futner in the Sefer on Purim has different vart. It says over here they wanted it specifically to be the waves because the wave is something unique about it. The wave, becomes enormous. Right, it could be very high, very powerful. Then it crashes into the shore and dissipates. What does it do the next time around? Nachal wave. Crashes into the shore and dissipates. You would think at some point this would be, you know, absurd. Why keep having waves? Why keep getting so excited if in the end of the day you just crash into the shore? The answer is because it's not a thinking thing. It's part of the tides and the moon and whatever, gravity. But it's coming to teach us a lesson about life. And that lesson about life is that even if things are temporary, it's still important to enjoy them while they're there. That's critical. Most people don't have that ashgrafa. Most people say, if it's not permanent, why enjoy it now? It's not going to last anyway, you know? And therefore, they kind of resign themselves to not enjoy this thing. And Chazal is teaching us just the opposite. That no, while it's here, enjoy it while it's here. Why is this in the Beis HaMikdash? So this Futner doesn't explain, but I'll tell you, I think it's based on something we said yesterday, and we'll discuss it again in a minute. Chazal knew that the Beis HaMikdash was not going to last forever. Right? Even when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, he built bedded in the Arabayas, he built a Beis Geniza for the Aron. He knew the Beis HaMikdash wasn't destined to last forever, so he built a vault for the Aron when they would have to go into the Gol. Second Beis HaMikdash, they knew also wasn't going to be last forever, because they knew that when they didn't come back in mass, at the time of Ezra Nehemiah, that they knew that because of that, the Beis HaMikdash was going to be like wood that would rot, and not like silver, right? That doesn't rot. We saw the Gemara in Yuma on Daf Tes. So they knew the second Beis HaMikdash wasn't going to last either. So then, why are we enjoying this thing? It's not going to last. So one could have said, "Oh, what a beautiful Beis HaMikdash you have! I hope it looks nice in ruins. I hope it makes nice, you know, bricks for the Romans when they pave their streets with your bricks from your Beis HaMikdash. I hope it looks nice. It's not going to last." So Chazal said, look at the waves. Look at the waves. The waves are geschmack when it's there, and then it crashes into the seashore. But what does it do again? Nachal wave. Nachal wave. So it's gevaldik when it's there, even though it's not there forever. And they're teaching us a lesson to appreciate things, even if it's not there forever, appreciate it while you have it. I hate to use a modern term, but like it's mindfulness. Live in the moment. Yes, it's not going to last forever. It's true. But enjoy it now. Chazal saying mindfulness, I have no idea. But what I'm saying is, enjoy it now, even though it's not going to last forever, be in the moment. There's a famous verse from the Majritzer. The Majritzer says in the Divrei Yisrael, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu at the time of Maamar HaSinai. The Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, not in Yisrael, that Alei Elayah Hara V'Heyei Sham, climb the mountain and be there. What do you mean, be there? Where is Moshe Rabbeinu going? He had other appointments. What does it mean, and be there? So Majritzer says, what it means is, be here. You're not going to be here forever. You just came up, and you're going to go back down. It's not permanent, but enjoy it while it lasts. Enjoy it now. Live in the moment. That's what Vehayesham, you know, is all about. And perhaps that's what the Beis HaMikdash over here was all about too. Was, of course, they knew this wasn't going to last forever, but enjoy it while it is. Futner has this in Purim, because Purim is somewhat different than the other Yomim Tovim. The other Yomim Tovim are meant to impact our lives throughout the year. Pesach, Emunah, Sukkah, Bitachon, whatever all the different messages and themes of each Yom Tov is, Purim is Adul Yada. He says, what, we want Adul Yada the whole year? No, we don't want Adul Yada the whole year. So Futner writes, he says, today is Purim, tomorrow is not Purim. Purim, you're not supposed to be, as is true, Mishnechnas Adam, Arim, Besimcha, but the attitude, the Avodah of Purim is only on Purim. It's not meant to be drinking more the whole year. That's not the Avodah at all. So it's limited to this one day. Enjoy the day. That's it. That was a Futner's message. Well, I don't know whether that's, you know, merit of that argument and nishtahar. But I think over here, it really contributes something important, that's why they cared about the waves. I think it's important they cared about the beauty. It's interesting, too. And they wanted Davka, the waves. But what did Hordas do? Hordas increased the size, the footprint of the Beis HaMikdash. So that was something we mentioned in passing, and I wanted to just revisit it for a little bit, because this important topic comes up all the time. And we're in the Agadata Gemara. So many things here, but also so hard to really pin down. And so on our way out of the Agadata, I wanted to discuss this topic, which really has its roots here, and what Hordas did in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash and expanding the footprint of the Beis HaMikdash in terms of what's the status of going on to the Har HaBayis. So I wanted to just, you know, kind of nail down some things we mentioned in passing. But look over here, the Rambam writes in Perek Vav Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Halacha Yadalin, that even though the Rambam feels the first Kedusha, the Kedusha Rishonah that Yeshua endowed the land of Eretz Yisrael with, when he conquered it, that only lasted temporarily to the end of the Bayis Rishon. Kedusha Rishonah Kitcha L'Shaita V'Loi Kitcha L'Asalava, but the Kedusha of the Har HaBayis, the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, that endured. Even after the Kedusha Rishonah, Ophisha Kedushas HaMikdash Rishalayim Ibnei Ashchina V'Ashchina Eina B'Teila. The Shechina can never be removed by any conquering nation. So yes, Yeshua conquered Eretz Yisrael. When someone else conquered it, the Kedusha dissipated. Not so with regards to the Har HaBayis, the Makom HaMikdash. That endures because that's Mipnei Ashchina, Shechina, Shechina Eina B'Teila. The Raiva disagrees, which would mean that the Beis HaMikdash today, of course, is Kadosh. Certainly after Kedusha Shniyah, which the Rambam feels Kedusha Shniyah was Kitcha L'Shaita V'Kitcha L'Asababa. However, the Raiva disagrees. Look over here, the Raiva says, V'lo oid el shani oim ha-shafil Rabbi Yosi, Da'amar Kedusha Shniyah Kitcha L'Asababa, even those who hold that Kedusha Shniyah was Kitcha L'Asababa, lo amar el shara itself, v'yushalayim lo mikdash loy. Yishlam and the Beis HaMikdash were not Kadosh, Kedusha Sarum, Mephisha Hayyodea, Ezra, Shamikdash, Yishlam, Asidim, Lishtanos. They knew it was going to be destroyed, as we mentioned a bunch of times. It was Kadosh, Kedush Akar, Lomi, Kved Hashem, Liyolam, at the time of the third Beis HaMikdash. Lafika. So therefore, they endowed it with a temporary Kedusha. They never had a permanent Kedusha in mind. So if that's the case, says the Rabbi, now it's not Kadosh. Lefika kaniklas ata ein bar karis. The person who enters into the Beis HaMikdash now does not receive the punishment of karis. The truth of the matter is, the Ramban has the same argument as the Rabbi from a different angle. The Ramban argues of here is vav that the kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash cannot be temporary. Harei Beis HaMikdash asma yotzim kedushasim al yadam. It's not because it was temporary; it's because it was conquered. There's a pasuk ubo ba pritzim v'chilaluha. The Pritzim came and they defiled it. That's what happened to Beis HaMikdash, is that the Pritzim came and they defiled it. And that removed the Kedusha. He was talking about the Beis HaMikdash when it gets destroyed. The whole thing is Zeris HaKasav. So the Ravid says there's no Kedusha today because it was endowed temporarily. The Ramban says because it was conquered. And the Ramban believes that there is Kedusha even today. Who do we paskel like? And what is the opinion according to the Rabbi? Look at the Rabbi. The Rabbi says, "Anichnas atasham ein bo karis." If you enter in there, there's no karis. That's not like a, right, we said the other day. It's not a glowing endorsement. That's not like, please enter, come in. You won't get karis if you do. That's not like, you know, you won't get harmed. It means you won't get karis. It doesn't sound like it's not anything wrong. So some paskim said, even according to the Rabbi, there's still some kedusha, even if there's no karis. But it's generally assumed, according to the Rabbi, according to the Ramban, that there's no kedusha today. So how do we paskin? So there are two historical accounts that we have. There's one historical account from the Kaftor Vaferach. The Kaftor Vaferach was a traveler and geographer whose pen name was Ishtar Haparchi. Non-Jewish sources quote him too. 1300s France. Ishtar Haparchi. His real name was like Yitzchak or something. I'm not sure why he felt he needed a pen name. But in his Sefer Kaftu Aferach, he writes, he visited Eretz Israel in the 1200s, 1300s. And the Jews were not going onto the Har Habayis. But the Meiri, from a similar time, writes over here, Isaiah, HaNechnas Achshav, V'sham Ein Bokaris, V'minig Poshet Likanesh Hashav. People do enter into there. So we have conflicting accounts. What exactly was taking place in the Makom HaMikdash? Were people going there? Were they not going there? Machlokes, the Rambam and the Ravid, who do we pass like? So the Mishnah Berurah, as we mentioned the other day, says over here, Simin Tav Kuf Samach Aleph, HaNechnas Atel LaMakom Mikdash Chayiv Karis. He passes like the Rambam. He assumes it still has Kedusha, and that's the way we should be Machmer. So to nowadays evoke the opinion of the Ravid and the opinion of the Ramban is really not fair. We assume the Mishnah Berurah is the Pesach Acharon for Hilchos Shabbos. I guess for Hilchos Kedusha is based on Mikdash too. Even those who are Mako, if you go into the Har Habayis, no one brings up the Ravid as the source for doing so. At the base of Mikdash is in Kaddish today. It's for other reasons. For other reasons. How then can you go into the Har Habayis? If we pass like the Rambam, and we all are Tamei Meis, everyone is Tamei Meis, came in contact with a mace, or someone who came in contact with a mace, or a metal thing that came in contact with a mace. Most of us have been to funerals. How is anyone allowed to go into the Har Habayis? So the answer is, unless you're going to pass like the Ravid, and that to do that seems to be a little bit, you know, absurd at this point. But it is a different argument. And that is because there are different kinds of Tumeim who are prohibited in different places in the Beis HaMikdash and the Har Habayis. We all know from Parshas Nasai that there are three machnois in the machna of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, right? There was the machna Shechina, where the Kohanim with the Mishkan was. There was the machna Leviya, for those who were not Kohanim lived, the rest of the Leviim, Shevet Levi, not descendants of Aaron. And then there was the machna Yisrael. There are certain people who had to be evicted from the whole machna Yisrael, the Mitzayra, right? Had to be sent out of even the machna Yisrael. There were certain other Tameim, though, not the Mitzayra, who had to be, you know, restricted from the Machna Leviya, but not from the Machna Yisrael. There were certain ones who were only restricted from the Machna Shechina, but not necessarily from the Machna Leviya. So we had these three concentric circles of increasing Kedusha. Yeah, we're familiar with this system from the travels of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. So the same is true, that same pattern holds when they landed in Eretz Yisrael. The Machna Shechina was the Beis HaMikdash. The Machna Leviya is the Har Habayis. The Machna Yisrael is the Yerushalayim. So let's say a Mitzayra would have to leave Yerushalayim. Doesn't have to leave the Galil. Doesn't have to leave Ephrat. Doesn't have to leave Bnei Brak. He has to leave Yerushalayim. There are certain people not allowed in the old city of Yerushalayim because it had the status of the Machna Yisrael. Har Habayis is Machna Leviya. Beis HaMikdash is Machna Shechina. That's the Machna of the Kohanim. The truth of the matter is there's even more gradations in that. The Mishnah Maseches Kehilim, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav, says that there are 10 levels of Kedusha, Eser Kedusha Sein, and within that system of 10, there's the Har Habayis, the Chil, which was this little border outside the Beis HaMikdash, the Ezras Nashim, the Ezras Anashim, then you're talking about in the Beis HaMikdash itself. So those who are restricted from being on the Har Habayis, which is the equivalent of the Machna Leviya that Christ will travel within the Midbar, are Zavim, Zavois, Nida, Yoledes, are not allowed to enter into the Har Habayis. The Tamei Meis is not excluded. So a Tamei Meis can enter into the Har Habayis. He can't go to the Makom HaMikdash. That's like the Machna Shechina. A Tamei Meis is prohibited from the Machna Shechina. But a Tamei Meis is actually, most people probably don't know this, a Tamei Meis is permitted on the Har Habayis. That's not the problem. What is the problem? A Zav, we don't have Zavos today. That's like a Whitey mission, not a 7-1 mission, a Whitey mission that somehow, you know, one of these diseases we don't have anymore. Condition. Zava we do have. Nida and Zava are quite similar. Involves bleeding not during the menstrual cycle. During the menstrual cycle is a Nida, not during the menstrual cycle is a Zava. We treat every woman today like she's a Zava. A Nida and Yoledes, we have plenty of those, right? So all those people are prohibited from entering onto the Har Habayis. So as long as you're not a Zav, you sound like, you know, you should be okay. However, the Gemara says, "Imsachum over here, sound like Zayin Mabez." V'yishkum in a machne called Taru v'chol Zav. Amar Zav v'chol Zav. The Rabbos Balkari. That's going to be a problem. So anybody who ever had a seminal emission is not, even if he's not a Zav, a Balkari. A Balkari is prohibited from entering into the from entering into the Har Habayis. And Balkari is prohibited from entering into the Har Habayis. Yeah, so that's going to be a problem. So what can you do? Go to the mikvah. You can go to the mikvah for Tumas Balkari. You don't need Eifer Parah Aduma. That's for Tumas Mace. You don't need it for Balkari, so go to the mikvah. If you go to the mikvah, then you can go onto the Har Habayis. Will that help? So there are two hurdles over here. The first is one that this suggestion was made a long time ago already. Even though, by the way, in order for a person to become Tar, he has to wait till what's known as Harav Shemesh. That means the sun has to set. When the sun sets, he becomes, right? The guy goes to the mikvah during the day. When the sun sets, he becomes Tar. You don't become Tar the minute you come out of the mikvah. You know, what's known as a Tful Yom. Tful Yom means you went to the mikvah that day. In order to become Tar, you require Harav Shemesh. Is a Tful Yom permitted to enter into the Har Habayis? So look over here. The Gemara says, "Imsachim tefu yom lo yikanes b'machne leviyah." Tefu yom is not allowed to enter into the machne leviyah. And Rashi there writes, "The same is true about a tefu yom of a balkari. V'nirkom imenu b'machne leviyah. V'nirkom b'machne leviyah. K'daminu b'psachim. The balkari mishtareh chutz l'shtei machnas. And a tefu yom, if he's not tar yet, he's still prohibited in the Har Habayis." Tosfos says, "Lo b'chol machne al me'ezus noshim v'lifnim." Only from the Ezra's Nashim men inside. So at least according to Tosis, Machloek between Rashi and Tosis is a Tful Yom of a Balkari permitted in the Har Habayis. You would have thought when you were learning this for the first time in Pesachim, when does this ever come up? A Tful Yom of a Balkari on the Har Habayis? What comes up? Come out every Yom, every day. A Tful Yom. A guy who's a Balkari, went to the mikvah in the morning, wants to go before the night, comes, before he has Harav Shemesh, can he go into the Har Habayis? Machloek is Rashi and Tosis over here. But even according to those who hold that a Tful Yom is permitted onto the Har Habayis, there's another problem. The Taisus writes over here in Shabbos, based on the Gemara, that the Gazer Aleim Shu Kazam called the Brahim. They were Gazer on every Am Ha'aretz, that he should have the status of a Zav. Why? Because Am Ha'aretz were not careful about Tumah V'Tara. Shafi likes to say there were many kinds of Am Ha'aretz. Am Ha'aretz is actually a very complicated topic. Someone from Rebbe or something wrote their doctoral thesis about Am Ha'aretz. Amar, it's a very complicated, maybe some other actually school. It's a very complicated issue because in Chazal, you see that they have, we think in Amar, it's like an ignorant guy. And there's truth to that, that a person who doesn't know anything, is an Amar. But there's different kinds of, like Rav Shechter used to say, if you don't know every Reb Chaim, you're an Amar, in a certain sense, you're an Amar. So how do you not know that Reb Chaim? You're an Amar. So yes, that's true. But typically we use the word Amar, and that's true in certain circles, right? But typically in other circles, we use Amar. The guy doesn't know, Aleph Beis. But Chazal had a different perspective of Amar. They had a very negative perspective of the Amar. It's like Rabbi Akiva says, when I was an Amar, if someone would have given me a Tamil Chacham and Ashkenu Kechamar, he said, Kechamar, why not like a Kelev? Because a Kelev bites and doesn't break bones. A Chamar bites and breaks bones. Rabbi Akiva hated Talmid Chachamim. When he was an Am Ha'aretz, Am Ha'aretz were like the bane of Talmid Chachamim. They hated Talmid Chachamim. So the term Am Ha'aretz actually changed throughout Chazal, throughout the history of the Gemara. At certain points, it was just an ignorant person. At other points, it was someone who was antagonistic. And that's why we find different perspectives about Am Ha'aretz. But Am Ha'aretz in this context means the person just wasn't aware of Tumah V'Tara. Since you're not aware of Tumah V'Tara, you're not practicing it properly. So they were geyser on every Am Ha'aretz that you should have a dino kezav. Now, a zav is prohibited from entering into the Har Habayis. So those that had this suggestion in the 1600s from Tzfas, let's go on to the Har Habayis. We'll go to the mikvah in the morning. We're Balkari, yes, okay. Go to the mikvah in the morning and then go on to the Har Habayis. That suggestion was made a long time ago. It was already in the Sefer called Derech HaKodesh, from Chaim Alafandri, the 1600s in Tzfas. Nothing to do with Rabbi Goren and the Six Day War. This was 1600s in Tzfas. One of his contemporaries, or a sefer called Chazon Nachum, not to be confused with the memorial volume for Dr. Lamb, known as Chazon Nachum, but the original Chazon Nachum was written in the 1600s by one of the contemporaries of Chaim Alafandri. In Tzfas, he argues, you can't do it, it won't help to go to the mikveh. You know why? When you come out of the mikveh, you're still in Am Ha'aretz. And Am Ha'aretz was Dino Kezav, because they didn't practice Tumah V'Tara even in the 1600s in Tzfas. Certainly today, none of us practice Tumah V'Tara. If we don't practice Tumah V'Tara, we should all have the status of a Zav. So what help is it going to be to go into the mikveh and then come out? Here, look, the Gemara says over here in Brokos, Mem Zayin Rebeis, Ezeu Am Ha'aretz, Kosha Eino Eicho, Chulun V'Tara. If you don't need Chulun V'Tara, meaning you're not careful about Tumah V'Tara, you're not Am Ha'aretz. Then later on it says, even if you learned, but you didn't have shimush, you're not amaretz. Achayr moimim, I feel a curve of shadow of shimush. Tell me to come and raise amaretz. So you can know gan shas, but you never did shimush, you're not amaretz. Yeah, there's different definitions of amaretz. But a person is not practiced some of the towers, and I'm amaretz when it comes to these things. So he has the status of a zav, because Chazal don't want them to be metame things. So what good is it going to go do to go in the mikvah in the morning from a tumas bal karen be a tefil yoyim, and we have a whole shir klali, taisis holds, a tefil yoyim is permitted to go into the harabayas even before he has harav shemesh. Because a tefil yoyim must be, by the way, there's a whole lumdus in tefil yoyim. What then is the tum of a tefil yoyim? It must be, it's not the same tum as the... We would typically say, a person is a balkeri, he goes to the mikveh, he doesn't become tar till the night, he remains tummy the rest of the day with tumas balkeri. That's what Rashi holds. That's why a tefil yoyim of a balkeri is not permitted to go into the harabayis till the night. Tosfos holds, no, a tefil yoyim is permitted after he goes to the mikveh, even though he's not tar yet. Which must mean, according to Tosfos, this typo has a whole piece about this in his Kilos Yaakov and Taurus, must be, according to Tosfos, the tumah of a tefil yoyim is a new tumah. It's not the residual tumah of Balkari that remains with him till the night, and the mikvah is kind of like a delayed reaction. You know, it doesn't take effect till you also have sunset. It's a new tumah that lasts with you to the night, and therefore he's permitted to go into the harabayis. So even if you say a tefil yoyim of a Balkari, he's permitted to go into the harabayis before he has harav shemesh, the minute he comes out of the mikvah, he remains in Am Haaretz. He blibes in Am Haaretz. What good is it going to be to go, you know, to go into the mikvah in the first place? And many disagreed with this argument of the Chazon Nochum, because Lamaisa, how could it be that there's a tumah you can't get rid of? How could it be that there's a status, a problem, you know, which needs a mikvah to solve it, and every time you go to the mikvah, it's like a vicious cycle, comes right back and, you know, attacks you. So how could it be that there's a tumah that's, you know, unable to be removed, and therefore many disagreed with the Chazon Nochum? Okay, according to the Chazon Nochum, there's mamish nothing to talk about. You cannot go to the mikvah and get into the harabayis because we all have the status of a zav as a result of the fact that we're not amaretz. Even those, though, today who are against it, don't quote this Chazon Nochum. I don't know why. Maybe they're unaware of it, but today most people are aware of things. So, but this is the argument of the Chazon Nochum. So many disagreed. So therefore, Rabbi Goren resuscitated this pshat of the Derech HaKodesh of Chaim Alafandri from the 1600s. After they reconquered Baruch Hashem, gained access once again to the Harabayis, historical times, which we don't take for granted. Rabbi Goren resuscitated this approach of the Derech HaChaim to once again go to the mikvah in the morning and then go on to the Harabayis in the middle of the day. You'll say, why not wait till the night and then go the following day? Why do you have to get involved in the Shiloh of Tefil Yoyim? The problem is we're afraid he's going to become a Balkari that night again. So in order to make sure that you're not a Balkari when you go on the Harabayis, we make you go directly from the mikvah to the Harabayis. Better to have a Tefil Yoyim on the Harabayis than have a person who's a Balkari all over again. We're not going to really trust the people to not be a Balkari. Rav HaPoiskim, and the time of Rabbi Goren and subsequently rejected this suggestion. The official position of the Rabbinate of Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbanut HaRashit, is not to go onto the Harabayis. And certainly the Gedolim at the time, the Stipler, Rav Shach, Rav Avadi Yosef, were all opposed to it. They were all opposed to it. Why? For good reason. Because a woman can't go. Neither Yoledes can't go. And what are you going to start asking every woman before she comes on? Are you Anita now? Or you want to start doing that? Imagine how that would end up. Wow, I can't even say it, right? That would be terrible. And no goyim. Nachri can't be allowed, right? So, wow, you're going to have Judaism, really? How's that going to work out? So, and then you have to, when you go on, you're going to have to be careful about where you go. You know, suga b'shoshanim, as if there's a row of hedges of telling people where they can go, where they can't go, because you can only go into the Harabayis, you can't go into the Makom HaMikdash. So it's going to get very, very tricky. So in order to prevent all of these problems, most of the Rabbanim were opposed to Rabbi Goren. So Rabbi Goren had one overarching argument, which is actually, it's a pretty good argument. And that is the following. The Mishnah says in Erevin, all the way at the end, Hakol nichnasim beheichol livnois l'sakin u'hoitzis ha-tumah. Even a nachri, even a person who's tamei, can go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim if a stone breaks to fix it. You don't have to have the Kohen Gadol come with a, you know, spackle and grout in order to fix the stones, the tiles, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim if it cracks. Who comes in? The maintenance crew. Fine. It's allowed. To build the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to come in. You're about to violate the rules of Tumah V'Tahara. Said Rabbi Goren Azai. Oh, he said, if you can go in to change the light bulb in the Kodesh HaKadoshim V'Tumah, How can you not go in to build the whole thing? He said, if we don't go on the Har Habayis, he realized after 67, almost prophetic, if we don't go on to the Har Habayis, we're going to relinquish control back. We'll never maintain control. We had control, we gave it away, push it, but okay. But we're going to relinquish control back. So we have to continue to go, because otherwise we're going to lose the whole thing. So that's why we have to go. Even if it's Betumah, and we can't control where everyone goes, even if, we'll do our best, but even if we can't control it, you go on Betumah in order to build the whole thing. How can you not then, you know, allow this? That was Rabbi Goren's argument. And to a certain degree, I think he's been proven right. I wrote an article about this going into the Arabis in 1999 for the RJJ Journal, if you even know what that is anymore. It used to be a journal called Good Journal. I think they revived it now. The Journal of Contemporary Halacha and Society. It was a popular thing in the 90s. And before. I think it petered out. Now they're trying to bring it back. So I wrote an article about this in 1999 about walking up to the Arabis. All the issues with the Kaisel, and you can see the articles there. But the editor at the time, his name was Rabbi Al Cohn, used to be the 12th grade Rebbe in MTA, a Rav in Blueberry Hill in Muncie. So he edited the RJJ Journal forever. He was a Talmud of RJJ. And he said to me, no one cares about this. I did research, archaeologists, maps. I was heavy into this. And he's like, no one cares about this. I'm not publishing that part of it. So he edited that part. The article's there from 1999 to 2000. And he edited that part out. That was when he, in 2000, he told me, no one cares about this. No one's going on our bias, whatever. Then, of course, you know, it's a huge, 5 years later, 10 years later, it became the biggest thing. So, and it could be because we maintained an interest. People going itself precipitated, a renewed interest. I remember Rav Schechter, I asked when I was printing the article, I asked him about this argument to Rabbi Goren. He liked the argument to Rabbi Goren. He said, well, why do I have to go? Other people are going to go and keep the interest alive. So why do I necessarily have to? We don't need every person to go, but, you know, some people are going. That's going to keep our foothold there on the Har Habayis. So he actually told me at the time that he was, this is in the late 90s, that he was in a taxi and a guy offered to bring him to the Har Habayis. He had a special pass to get into Shaul Mugrabim. In those days, you needed a special permission from a diplomat. There were no hours that you could just go. There was no ramp then. You had to walk on the dirt over there. There was no wooden ramp. So the guy said he would bring Rabbi Schechter up. So Rabbi Schechter said, really? Wow, amazing, fine. He wanted to go. And then he asked him, you know, how often do you do this? He said, oh, every day I'm bringing people up there. So Rabbi Schechter said, what do I have to go? Okay, bring the rest of your people. Let them go. You know, in order to maintain a foothold on the Arabis, you know, he felt he didn't need to, you know, make that contribution. So look, Rabbi Goren's argument, I think a little bit has been proven correct. At the same time, if you want to take the other perspective, you know, maybe it's every single time we keep pushing the envelope on the Har Habayis is exactly when the Arabs, you know, it sparks an intifada with Ariel Sharon, if it was before your time also, the second intifada started when Ariel Sharon made a big deal about going to the Har Habayis. So the politicians at the time claimed it was a red herring, the Arabs were upset about something else, and they used Ariel Sharon as an excuse. Whatever it is, I don't know. I'm not a politician, I'm not a strategist, I'm not a general, I don't know. But I think that the case is, you know, there's a case to be made on either side of the issue, whether going into the Har Habayis provokes, you know, and stokes the situation more, or Adaraba, it stakes our claim more to our bias and is bringing us closer to building the Bayis Shlishi. I don't know. I don't know whether it's, you know, I can't take a side on that issue or not. But that was Rabbi Goren's argument. And, you know, I think for those who feel strongly about that argument, there is something to be said. What my Tatzon, the reason why I printed the article in the 90s, was I wanted to argue the following. Hurdus added on to the Har Habayis. That's clear. He rebuilt it. But look over here in the Mishnah Masechtas Midos, the Har Habayis was 500 amos by 500 amos. That's a square. The Har Habayis today is not 500 amos by 500 amos. Here, I gave you the diagram, which was edited out. At least someone should see it. Edited out of my article from 1999. Look over here on the third page. That was page 23. This was all edited out. This is the Har Habayis today. It's a trapezoid, really, but more of a rectangle than a square. So if you presume, as many archaeologists do, but it's a discussion even within the world of archaeology, that the Dome of the Rock represents somewhere where the Kodesh HaKadoshim was, and we can kind of extrapolate. We don't have exact measurements in terms of where the Beis HaMikdash was situated in the Har Habayis. Surprisingly, we don't know. It's not. The Mishnah never says. Mishnah says it was closest to this wall, second closest to that wall, third closest to this wall, and furthest away from that wall, but never tells you how close or how far away. So we never really know exactly where the Har Habayis. That's why there's a lot of tumbling. Where exactly is the Har Habayis? We just don't know, because the mission is not clear. We can estimate based on archaeology. But then it seems, you know, if that's where the Dome of the Rock is, that you know, Hurdus added on to the northern side and the southern side. The northern side is where it says 321 meters. That's the Muslim quarter. The southern side is, if you've ever been to the southern side of the southern wall excavations, that's over there. Yeah. So Hurdus added on. What's the status of the part that Hurdus added on? So we mentioned the other day, the Mishnah says in Mishach Peshvus over here, Oyste Zayin, Ein Moisifin al Yir Val Azaris El Bemelech V'Navi. You can't add on to the Kedusha of the Yerushalayim or the Beis HaMikdash unless you have a Melech or a Navi. And a Sanhedrin, Shtei Todos V'Shir, you need Karbanos, Urim V'Tumim, a lot of things we don't have. But the Mishnah never says the Har HaBayis. Why does the Mishnah mention the Har HaBayis? So the Rashash in that Mishnah, Mr. Fishwa says, is you cannot add on to the Har HaBayis. Why not? Or Sameach has the same thing. Because the Pasuk says, Ki bochar Hashem b'tzion evil l'moishav loya. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose this place, HaMakom HaShem Yivchar Hashem. You cannot add on to it. You cannot change it. It cannot, not adjustable. Beis HaMikdash, yes. Yerushalayim, yes. Not the Har HaBayis. So in fact, look at the Piskei HaToisvis. And that Mishnah, Mesechtas Midos. The Mishnah says in Midos that the Har HaBayis is 500 amas by 500 amas. He says today he was already aware that Har HaBayis is way bigger than that, almost double. Har HaBayis, hayo litzafin Yerushalayim, v'har hayagado harbe. Today the Har HaBayis is way bigger than Tuf Kuf Amo, Tuf Kuf Amo, lo hayakadosh, lo Tuf Kuf Amo, Tuf Kuf. What the Mishnah means is even though today it's bigger, the only Kedusha resides in 500 amas by 500 amas, the original Har HaBayis, whatever who this added on later, is not Kadosh. So my argument was, let's go on to the parts where there is no Kedusha of Harabites. And you can see, this is why I gave you the diagram. Look over here. This is another diagram. You can see, these pictures didn't exist when I was doing this research. But the picture over here of Solomon's temple platform, you see that that's probably the original Harabites. And then the Hasmonean and the Herodian extension. And what I told you the other day, look at this picture. You can find it online. Picture between the different stones, there's a seam, there's a straight joint in the wall, which was added on by Hurdus. And underneath there are tunnels. That's where they're digging out, excavating, to see if they can find different things. That's underneath those tunnels known as Aruvot Shlomo, Solomon's Stables, because they're tunnels that are built on top of each other. That's what supported the ground. He didn't fill it in with solid ground. There's tunnels underneath there. And you can see the seam in the wall, so that's where Herod added it on. So I said, great, let's go there. That's Tamar, that's Tar. I'll maintain my foothold, and I won't go anywhere near the Har HaBayis. I still hold on right. So that you can't get there. Because the problem is, the only way to get in is Shar Mugrabim. Shar Mugrabim, Mugrabi means Moroccan, because there used to be a Moroccan quarter. There were five quarters in Shoreham. There's a Muslim quarter, Armenian quarter, Jewish quarter, Christian quarter, and there used to be a Moroccan quarter called Mugrabim. The Moroccan quarter was removed when they removed the garbage in front of the Kotel and you know, made a Kotel plaza. So that was the Mugrabi quarter. That was the Moroccan quarter. The rest of the Moroccan quarter today is part of the Jewish quarter. It works well. We think there's four quarters because quarters are four and there should be four quarters. Quarters just means a neighborhood, like an arrondissement in Paris, if you know what that is. It's a neighborhood. That's it. So there used to be a Moroccan quarter, and that's what Shar Mugrabim means, and they always allowed non-Muslims to enter into the Har HaBayis only there. So fine, because the Moroccans were there, whatever. So that's the only gate we have. That gate is too close to the Dome of the Rock. That probably is. That's what they call it, the Susa Gate or something. That's the Halachic Har HaBayis. So my suggestion would work if we could get into the Muslim side, which is the Lion's Gate, I think, in the northern. I don't know. I'm sure a tourist gate in over there, but not Jewish tourists. So it'd be nice if we could go on the northern side. That would be Mutal B'chol HaDeis, but to go, or the southern side, which has no gate, but to go in the Shar Mugrabim, that's a little bit trickier. If you do go, you just have to be careful about a few things. First is go to the mikveh in the morning. That's true. Then you also can't wear shoes. Because there's still Mora Mikdash today. If I ever just look over here, last Mora Makom. There's still, you have to treat the Makom Mikdash with Kedusha, right? It's Kadosh. And that exists even today. Even after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, there's still Kedusha there, and you're not allowed to walk there with shoes on. Here, look at the Gemara Nivamis. Always to test. The Shav Society is Mora Mikdash Iti. Mora Beis HaMikdash, Lo Yikonis Adam, You're not allowed to do your business over there in Arabais. It includes walking in on shoes. Even if there's no Beis HaMikdash, just like the Shabbos exists beyond the term of the Beis HaMikdash, so too the Isser Meir HaMikdash exists even when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Mashmir Amura B'Shabbos Li'olam, just like Shabbos is forever, Af Meir HaOmer B'Mikdash Li'olam. So even today, there's Meir HaMikdash, you can't walk in with shoes on. Some say it's only leather shoes. I think some say no shoes at all. Some say that wear non-leather shoes, like Yom Kippur. Some say it's only leather shoes. What's interesting, though, is I think they used to not let you daven there. I don't know. I've never been, but I've been told that they used to not let you daven there. Then they were more lax about it. Now they're more careful about it. If you're not going to daven there, the question is, what are you going for? So if you're going, because that's a sightseeing thing, that's not Meir HaMikdash. By definition, it's not Meir HaMikdash. You're making the Beis HaMikdash into your tourist attraction. So Rambam says, look over here, Perek Zayin Beis HaBechira, Ezo Hi Yerah, so what does it mean, fearing the Makom HaMikdash? Lo Yikanes El Dvar Mitzvah. Only go in if it's for a Dvar Mitzvah. Can't go in to, it's not really right to make a shul into a sightseeing trip. Shuls really don't go into daven. So that's why when you go to shuls, if you've ever been to like Hebron and they visit the shul, you daven mincha there, or you say tilim there, or they say a shir there. Do something there. You shouldn't just go in to hop around and look around. And the Ramban shul too in the old city, beautiful. But if you're going to go in, daven mincha. Don't just take the tour and whatever. Do something in the shul. So Beis HaMikdash too, shouldn't just be a tourist site. The problem is you want to daven. They won't let you daven mincha in Arabais. So you should have in mind that I'm going Yishuv Eretz Israel, that we should binyan Beis HaMikdash or whatever reason you're going. So if you're going to go and that's the reason you're going, so then you should have that in mind. That's a Dvar Mitzvah. Okay, but to stam as I go in to take pictures and selfies, that's making it a tourist attraction. I don't think that's Meir HaMikdash by definition. All right, Chevra. Anyone ever been?